Mini episode 420 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 420. This is FDH Lounge managing partner Rick Morris here. We have our final NFL draft preview installment today and a very intriguing one. We are welcoming to the program, as we've done in the past, somebody from the Houston Texans organization. Previously, our good friend Mo Dean joined us, and she is someone who has participated with Texans TV previously. We have the host of Texans TV today and a gentleman who writes for HoustonTexans.com, and he is the point man for their coverage of the NFL draft. And, of course, what makes Houston so intriguing in all of this, of course, is that they hold the number one pick in the draft. And because of the way that things are breaking down with the draft, that not only sets it up for day one, but now that the NFL draft is a three-day affair, day two at the top of the draft, day three is a real source of intrigue as well. Houston is going to be in the middle of this the entire way through, but the focus, as always, is what's going to happen with the first pick in the draft. And we're going to talk through the process a little bit here today. Not that this gentleman knows or not that I know what is going to happen exactly, but we can maybe get a little bit closer to the truth and have some patented great FDH Lounge conversation while we're at it. Very happy to get this gentleman on the program, Drew Doherty. Very happy to have him on the show. Drew, how are you today, sir? Welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm great. You undersold me, man. I know exactly what's going to happen. All 11 picks of ours, you know, every single one.
Break it down, man. What's it going to be?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, like you mentioned, Texans control the board each day the draft starts, and tomorrow's the biggest day because a lot of speculation about whether or not Houston trades out or goes ahead and chooses, and if they do choose, it's probably going to be Jadeveon Clowney based on everything that you've read and kind of surmised. But, that's what it's looking like so far.
Well, let's take a second here and back up for a moment because certainly 12 months ago we would not have anticipated, barring a trade with another team, that Houston would be sitting there with the number one pick in the draft. There are a lot of folks like myself with significant egg on their faces that picked Houston to win the AFC, and instead one of the epic collapses of all time. Now, the gold standard I think that most people think of in the last 20 years is what happened with Indianapolis, where they were down for a year and they got Andrew Luck, and San Antonio when they were down for a year and got Tim Duncan. Maybe Houston having the first pick isn't as inexplicable as all of that because it was a lot of different circumstances. But let's back up for a second here and narrate for us, please, some of the low points that brought us here in the last 12 months.
Well, the team started out 2-0, and then Ed Reed came into the lineup week three at Baltimore, and Matt Schaub threw a pick six right before the half. It kind of gave the Ravens a really commanding lead, and in each of the next 2 weeks, he also threw a pick six, and just it really submarined the season. But really, where it all turned was in week four because they were taking on the Seahawks. The Seahawks were looking like a tough squad. Texans were 2-1 coming back after a road loss at Baltimore, and they go up, you know, about 21 points, and Seattle crept back in, and then Richard Sherman jumped a route and took a Matt Schaub pass to the house and tied it up. And I think if they win that game, they move to 3-1, and things are a lot different right now. But they didn't, and that's where they went. You know, a few weeks after that, Schaub was pulled from the starting lineup. They put in Case Keenum, who the year before was an undrafted rookie, and Case didn't get any wins. He showed some flashes, but you know, he didn't get any wins, and it was just an ugly, ugly season. You lost Brian Cushing to injury. You lost Arian Foster to injury. So, you know, two of your key cogs were gone, by the middle of the season, and it just was an ugly turn of events.
Now, for any of the people who ever played devil's advocate with me about picking Houston to win the AFC last year, I often got the argument thrown in my face about Matt Schaub and is he good enough to get to the Super Bowl. And I, of course, pointed out that Stan Humphries was good enough to get to the Super Bowl. Rex Grossman was good enough to get there. I wasn't picking Houston to win merely to get there, and there had been a precedent for this. But as I look at what happened last year, I'm really kind of wondering, and you would have a much better perspective than me or most of our listeners, is it true in your estimation that Matt Schaub has really not been the same since that foot injury and that, again, maybe physically he's not what he was? Because I had a higher estimation going into last year, again, not thinking that he was going to be down physically in any way. But does that provide any kind of ready explanation for why he crumbled the way that he did?
No, because the foot injury, you remember, happened in November of 2011. And in 2012, Texans had their best season in franchise history. You know, they won 12 games. They were 12-2, and all they needed was one more win. They lock up a bye and home field throughout, but you know they dropped this final two of the season. So I don't think it was the foot injury specifically that submarine Schaub. I mean, I think that played a part in things. I don't think he's as mobile and as nimble. Not to say he was ever, you know, a Fran Tarkenton type, but he could elude the rush and get out of the way sometimes. But I don't know. I don't know what happened with him, and definitely wasn't all his fault last season. Nobody's saying that, but you know, that's where the spotlight shone when things went sour.
Well, absolutely. The quarterback a lot of times is going to be in the crosshairs, whether it's deserved or not, much like the goalie in hockey. That's always going to be the focal point, but the thought, of course, was as they were going through that horrible season last year, okay, well, might have the first pick in the draft, at the very least should be able to get a top quarterback. And I think that's what was taken for granted before some of the quarterbacks started tumbling down the offseason boards here. And we'll get to that in a moment. But as far as the guy who has kind of filled the void, Jadeveon Clowney, who a year ago, again, it wouldn't have been a big shock to see him as the number one pick. And there he, along with Teddy Bridgewater, were anticipated to be the guys contending for that spot there. The question that I have about Clowney is not the one that everybody else has about the motor or anything like that, but specific to the Texans, running a 3-4, is there a little bit of concern in town there that he doesn't seem to be the prototypical 3-4 outside linebacker? You would think that he might have to trim down a little bit to play the position, and then whatever additional amount he gets in speed, which is frightening, but whatever he would gain in that, he would probably lose in power. Is there any thought about that, or would they kind of just take him as he is physically and throw him in there if that were the case? What's the thought about Clowney being a little bit bigger than your average 3-4 outside linebacker?
Yeah, that thought has been espoused externally, but you got to remember, inside the organization, the defensive coordinator is Romeo Crennel. Now, Romeo Crennel's, he's seen a thing or two. You got to remember, he was around that Giants defense that had Lawrence Taylor, and then he was around that Patriots defense that had Willie McGinnis kind of roaming and Mike Vrabel, that linebacking core. So he's seen some things. He's creative, and they're going to run a multiple defense. In name, it'll be a 3-4 because of, you know, you have more linebacker-ish types on your roster, but they're going to move guys around, and I don't think there's any worry at all about whether or not Clowney would fit in on the field or in a scheme. And you also got to remember, Bill O'Brien has said multiple times that the Texans are going to run most of their defense in nickel anyways, because you know teams pass 60 to 70% of the time in the NFL now. So I don't think that's a big concern internally. I think that's something that's more experts, analysts, writers, journalists, all that stuff, bringing up more than people within the organization.
Good point, and witnessed by the fact that we are talking about it externally here as well. So, yeah, it may be more of a chatter point for guys like us. That's very well taken. Additionally, one of the things that occurs to me as well when looking at this, if they were to get Clowney or if they were to take Mack in that spot or even trade down slightly to take Khalil Mack, is that you're looking at a situation where Brian Cushing all of a sudden becomes your third best pass rushing option there with J.J. Watt on the team. That is something that would certainly have to have Texans fans psyched. No.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's your inside linebacker. He's kind of your captain of your defense, and not really out on the edge as much. But if you can bump that guy down to being the third most dangerous pass rusher, that's going to be a great thing. And I don't think you can underscore enough how much his loss meant to this team each of the last two seasons. In 2012, he gets kind of cheap-shotted from behind against the Jets on Monday Night Football in Week 5. And after that, the defense went from being first in the league to about, you know, middle of the road, 17th, 18th in the NFL. And then he was gone by November this year, this last season. So that really hurt the Texans. And he was their team MVP in 2011 when they had that phenomenal defense. They went a round deep in the playoffs. So, yeah, if he's one of your, I guess you're not your third option, but kind of your third, third marquee player on your defense, you're doing some good things there on that side of the football for sure.
Well, and I'll preface this by saying, God forbid, because nobody ever wants to see this, but if it's 3 years in a row, there'll be definite loud concerns. But are there even mild concerns at all there that clearly one of their franchise players has gone down 2 years in a row? Is there starting to get to be a little bit of a worry, or are they kind of ascribing it still at this point to flukish, two different things happen, and it doesn't necessarily bode ill for the future?
Yeah, it's the latter. I mean, in 12, he had a guy, he was running one way, and a guy came from basically his 8 o'clock and dove at his left knee. And so he ripped the ACL. I mean, it would happen to anybody. And then last year, his injury was, he was coming towards the line of scrimmage, and Jamal Charles dove at his knee, and it wasn't a malicious block or anything. He just went low on him and he caught him. So I don't think he's injury prone. I just think he's, like you said, had two really awful, awful instances of bad luck. And I don't think you can't put the injury prone tag on him, because he's played through a lot. I mean, he pretty much did not practice his entire rookie season in 2009. He was always in a walking boot. Yeah, he was out there on Sundays though, and put a great campaign then.
He is a warrior. He's definitely a big key to that defense. We talked about Clowney coming off the edge in a 3-4. The Texans, of course, running that defense, they're one of the teams that would look at Clowney and Mack in the same kind of light, as mm-hmm. opposed to other teams that would be looking at Clowney to be in a 3-4 for them, and Mack to be just a regular 4-3 outside linebacker. So the fact that it's an apples-to-apples comparison on who you want filling that spot if you're going to go there. Obviously, Clowney has the questions about the motor, but much like when Julius Peppers came out and some other guys before him, the thought that he's a once-in-a-generation physical talent, Khalil Mack just thought to be an absolute beast and somebody who himself would be a really big difference maker, the best pure linebacker, I guess we would say, out of this draft, since Clowney would be sort of a transition into it. What are the thoughts, as best you can tell, internally, or things you're hearing about internally with the whole Clowney versus Mack question, and whether they would trade down to take Mack a spot or two?
That wouldn't surprise me. I know they like the idea of both of those players. Mack can play a little bit more for you on the inside as well as on the outside, the linebacker spot, and that's certainly an attractive idea, and it fits with what you think and we think we're going to see from a Bill O'Brien football team, because while he's not a pure Belichick guy, he saw what worked and what went well in New England. And think about all the guys that played for the Patriots during their glory days that were playing out of position or playing different positions than normally. And you had Deion Branch going over to the defensive side of the ball and playing some corner. And you had Mike Vrabel switching over and catching passes at tight end. He's got, I think, 16 career receptions in the regular season and the postseason, and every one of them is a touchdown. So, they like to see varying roles for guys. And in that regard, and in that light, I think that's something that makes sense as far as, Mack becoming a Texan. I think that could be a real possibility, because he's going to be a versatile type of player.
Well, absolutely, the team could benefit from either of those two guys on the edge, and the ripple effect on what is already an outstanding defense when it's completely healthy would be just almost immeasurable. On the offensive side of the ball, again, the anticipation had been, until the quarterback started kind of getting devalued here in silly season with Teddy Bridgewater having his bad workouts and pro day and everything, the thought was that quarterback would be the spot there. And when Bill O'Brien was hired, there was some word out there that through some of the connections that he had, that he'd gotten to be very enamored of Blake Bortles. And that was a name that had gotten floated. And I guess to this day, with all the smoke that's out there, we probably can't completely rule out the thought that it could still be him or Johnny Manziel in that spot. Teddy Bridgewater seems to be completely ruled out for number one at this point. But thoughts on that, on what the team is going to do at quarterback, and if they don't take somebody there, what they're going to do the rest of the way, because what's on the roster doesn't seem to be sufficient for coming back in and challenging for a playoff spot this year, and what they could still go out and get, you know, short of a Kirk Cousins trade. So really, what are the thoughts that you have on what the options are and how they see it internally?
Well, Bill O'Brien has gone on record and said the Texans will draft a quarterback. Didn't say what round, but nothing would truly astonish me. I mean, I could see the Texans staying at one and taking a guy like Bridgewater or, you know, another quarterback. Like, I think if they were to stay at one and take a quarterback, I think Bridgewater would be the guy. But I think a more likely scenario would be them taking that 33rd pick and spending it on a quarterback, or maybe moving up into the end of the first round and taking a quarterback, or trading back from 33 and picking up maybe another two and, you know, getting that quarterback in the middle of the second round. O'Brien has said he likes traits from about 11 or 12 guys, and he's mentioned the names like Garoppolo, and he's mentioned Bortles, and he's brought up Aaron Murray and A.J. McCarron. So I think there's a lot of possibilities there, and nothing would really stun me as far as what the Texans do, but they will draft a quarterback. Wouldn't surprise me if you saw him take another guy late, like in the sixth or the seventh. They have the final pick of the draft, the quote-unquote Mr. Irrelevant pick. They've got, you know, an extra six that they got in the trade to Oakland for Matt Schaub. So, you know, they've got a lot of picks there, 11 total. It wouldn't surprise me if they took two and then even brought in a guy as an undrafted free agent. I think he's going to really – he wants to kind of do diligence and explore all the options as far as, you know, having a guy under center who can run what he wants to run offensively.
Well, short of ending up with Teddy Bridgewater one way or another, who does seem in some ways to be fairly pro-ready, or making a trade for somebody like Kirk Cousins, who of course is, you wouldn't think that whoever they're going to be taking, particularly if they're not a first-round pick, you would not think that they're going to be the opening day quarterback, and you would think,
right,
that, again, that would really put a damper on thoughts of making a huge comeback this year. So how do you see it shaking out as of now? Unless there's a dramatic move for Cousins, unless it's somebody like Bridgewater that they think they can go with day one, how do you feel like the season enters with somebody under center for the Texans?
It would make sense that it would be Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think he would probably be your guy to start. We'll see what happens with Case Keenum and with T.J. Yates, but I would think that Fitzpatrick would get that first shot ahead of a rookie who's taken in the second or the third round or maybe even later. But I would think they'll start out with Fitzpatrick while the young guys learning the ropes. And it'll be interesting to see what Fitzpatrick does if he in fact is the guy, because you wonder, is this a better offense than he's been in at Tennessee and then Buffalo before that? Is it on par, not as good? Who knows? He's thrown some pretty good receivers in his time. Think about it. He was with the Bengals way back when Ocho Cinco and Hushman Zada were there, and he threw to Stevie Johnson, and last year he had some younger guys in Tennessee. So he's thrown to some pretty good players in his time. He had T.O. in Buffalo as well. But I think he's probably he's probably your stopgap there at the beginning of the year as they develop a younger guy.
Well, you could definitely do a lot worse as far as caretakers go in the league, and certainly with my hometown Cleveland Browns, I can attest to that firsthand. I have seen dozens of caretaker quarterbacks worse than Ryan Fitzpatrick. So, yeah, what you're saying, I think, makes absolute sense there. There's the other possibility as well, and we've kind of tiptoed around it a little bit so far, but the notion of them getting out of the spot and trading down to Atlanta or Buffalo potentially and bringing them up to Houston's spot at number one. What are some thoughts on that? I mean, it's a way, obviously, for the team to continue to accrue picks. They're not your traditional 2-14 horrible team, so they don't necessarily have the multitudes of holes that some other quote-unquote bad teams have, but it is a way in a deep draft to get some more players, even if they don't have all of the impact of whoever you would take at number one. So do you get any kind of a sense that they may still be entertaining that, and what is your sense of how that would go over with the public?
Yeah, I absolutely think they're entertaining draft offers. Rick Smith, the general manager, said so last week in his press conference. He said, you know, they'll explore all options. I don't think you'll see the Texans sign their first pick tonight or tomorrow during the day, and we'll know who the first-round pick is going into this draft. That's what they did with Mario Williams in 2006, but I don't think that'll be the case tomorrow. I think they're going to use 8, 9, almost 10 minutes that they're allotted, and they're going to let, you know, whoever makes an offer, they'll entertain all those offers, because they can move back just a little bit, still get one of the guys that they targeted as being a difference maker. I think they'll do that, because you can probably pick up an extra pick or two or three or four, depending on how rich the ransom would be.
Well, it's very interesting you mentioned Mario Williams, because I think that was what a lot of people flashed back to when we first started hearing the reports that Jadeveon Clowney might be the number one pick there, because I think that was still when a lot of folks outside of Houston, myself included, were just kind of assuming that it would be a quarterback. And you started hearing a lot of things in the press about, oh, well, you know, Bob McNair, he really was a big proponent of Mario Williams, and they went in that direction, and he likes that kind of player, and they may do that again. As far as Bob McNair's alleged preference for drafting guys like this, how heavy do you think that necessarily weighs in all of this?
Yeah, he's kind of a tiebreaker, I think, if it comes down to it. But he's a very hands, not, I don't want to say hands-off, but he delegates and lets his subordinates do their job. He's not a micromanager. He's not a Steinbrenner type of that. Not that really anyone else is, but he's a guy that's going to let his lieutenants do their job. And I know I spoke with him back in January, and he had marvelous things to say about Jadeveon Clowney, because they're both former Gamecocks. That's where Mr. McNair went to school. But he also said really nice things about Johnny Manziel. So, I mean, he's involved in the process, but he's not going to put his foot down and say, no, we're doing this because. I mean, he's going to listen to what his general manager and his head coach have to say, his scouting department, and he's going to trust those people to make the right decision.
Well, that's the ideal way for an organization to run anyways. If the owner has the deep pockets to get things done, lets the pros do their job. Yeah, that would certainly be ideal for Texans fans, assuming that the front office is moving in the right direction, if he was to let them do that. As far as the thing that this draft is known for the most overall, I would have to say, of course, the wide receiver position. I hope I haven't jinxed it on this program by saying I think this could be somewhat analogous to the class of 96 with all the great players and the depth that came out of that. So for a team like Houston that for a lot of years has been crying for a real compliment to Andre Johnson, and there have been some years with Owen Daniels, yes, but never really a super explosive compliment to Andre Johnson, and now he's actually quietly kind of starting to get up there in years himself, although he's holding up pretty well. So Houston has to be looking in that direction. How early do you think they may go in what, again, could be a very, very historic crop of wideouts?
Well, you never rule anything out. I don't think they're going to take a wide receiver in the first couple, three rounds. They spent a first last year on DeAndre Hopkins out of Clemson, and he came in and had a really fine rookie season, had about 800 yards receiving. So he was a very and you remember, think about who he had quarterbacking. He had Matt Schaub and Case Keenum, so it wasn't the ideal quarterback situation. So he had that. While Andre Johnson had 1,400 yards receiving again. It's the fourth time in NFL history, or excuse me, the fourth time in his career that he's done that, and only Marvin Harrison and Jerry Rice have done that, have four 1,400-yard receiving seasons. So will they go wide receiver? I don't know that they're going to do that early. I could see it happening later, but, you know, maybe if a guy like Allen Robinson falls, and I don't think he will, but the former Penn State pass catcher who – Bill O'Brien and Stan Hickson, the wide receivers coach for the Texans, both those guys coached him at Penn State, and maybe that would be an option. But I don't see them going pass catcher very early. I really don't.
Well, that's interesting. Again, they may have their pick of some guys to drop later on just because, again, the depth there is so extraordinary. Of the positions that we haven't covered yet, how do you see that marrying with the needs of the Houston Texans? What are some additional positions we've not yet covered that they got to be thinking, yeah, we need to get somebody here?
Well, you know, I do think there are some holes that you got to fill on this team. I think the Texans will draft a running back. Ben Tate departed in free agency. Arian Foster is coming back after missing half the season with an injury. I think you'll see them take a guy in the middle rounds there. I always think they're always going to take an offensive lineman, whether it's with the first pick overall with Greg Robinson, or if it's, you know, later in the draft and the second, third, you know, throughout. I do think they'll take another defensive lineman because J.J. Watt is the only returning starter from last year on the defensive line. You're going to need linebacker help. You're going to need, you know, Rick Smith said last week, I always am looking at cornerbacks in a draft, no matter the depth chart. So, I mean, I just pretty much ticked off every position there is. I didn't even include quarterback. So, was that vague enough for you? I think I didn't. No, I think punter was set. We're not going to draft anybody because Shane Leckler is there, and he performed splendidly for us in 2013.
Here's a real clip and say, we can rule out punter, everything else is up for grabs. But,
that's true, man.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, that's what happens a lot of times when you're 2-14, even if, as we've been saying, not your traditional 2-14 team. And along those lines, I guess just to bring it full circle from where they were last year to where they're heading going into this year, again, it's going to be hard for a lot of the fans to assess things until after the draft. But again, as we all know, that doesn't stop the fans from getting ahead of matters here. So what are the thoughts at this point, the expectations about getting back to at least a 9-7 point this year where playoffs could be feasible? Is there a thought that kind of bounce back could happen that early? Are people a little bit more patient? This looks more like a rebuild on the fly than a rebuild situation, but how are the fans seeing it?
You know, the fans are kind of, I think they're in a wait-and-see mode. I mean, obviously every fan wants a Super Bowl for his or her team, but I think they want to see, well, who did the Texans draft? I mean, what's the quarterback position going to look like? Because, you know, it all comes back to that, you know, who's throwing the football, who's leading your team. And, you know, I think they want to see what the actual team looks like after the draft, after they've added those pieces and maybe brought in a later free agent, you know, as the summertime rolls on. But getting back to 9-7, that's tough any year. I don't know how quickly they could turn things around, but it's always a possibility in the NFL because they're playing a 2-14 schedule. You know, they get the worst team in the AFC East and the AFC West, I believe. So yeah, they'll play the Raiders and they'll play the Buffalo Bills. So you get that, and then you're playing in the AFC South, which was kind of not a tough division last year, aside from the Colts. So there's a chance where you can kind of make some ground and get some wins here and there.
Absolutely, and not mentioned in there the worst team in the AFC North, my Cleveland Browns, which traditionally have been a date circled on the calendar for any teams. If the NFL had homecoming weekend, I think many teams would be scheduling that for when the Browns were playing there. But, Houston has that to look forward to as well. But, again, first and foremost, they have the NFL draft to look forward to, which we are, again, very happy to be talking about with you, Drew, on the eve of the event here. So, again, as I knew it would be, a tremendous conversation today with you, Drew Doherty of HoustonTexans.com and host of Texans TV. Thank you so much for your time. We would look forward to catching up with you as things go along and seeing how the matters progress for the Texans franchise.
Hey, Rick, I really appreciate it. Let's do this again real soon. Sound good?
Love to do that. Thank you so much, Drew. Really appreciate you being on with us today. And thank you all for joining us today for FDH Lounge mini episode number 420.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.